Hello, everyone. Welcome to Coffee with Convery, the podcast where we sit down with industry leaders and outstanding individuals making a difference. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing our esteemed guest, David Levangie. David is a partner, litigation at Folger Rubin Hoff LLP in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, with an impressive 16 years of experience in the legal field. David has become a leading figure in litigation and a dispute resolution group at Folger. David's practice focuses on complex commercial litigation and arbitrations, where he excelled in cases involving breach of contract, shareholder disputes, oppression, and breaches of fiduciary duties. He's not just an exceptional litigator, he's a strategic thinker and a problem solver. David's journey includes academic excellence, having earned a Bachelor of Social Science in Criminology and Political Science, graduating summa cum laude from the University of Ottawa. He furthered his education at the Osgoode Hall Law School, obtaining an LLB in 2008 and being called to the Ontario Bar in 2009. What sets David apart is not just his legal accomplishments, but his commitment to service. Proudly serving in the Canadian Armed Forces for 6 years, David received numerous awards, including Soldier of the Year for his regiment and Service Person of the Year for the entire communication group. I'm super excited now to welcome David as we jump into his journey, explore his experiences in complex litigation, his dedication to veterans' rights, and his role in diversity and inclusion within the legal profession. David, welcome to Coffee with Convery.
Hi, Brian. Very nice to see you.
Good to see you too. So why don't we do a few rapid fire questions so the audience gets to know a little bit more about you? What are your pronouns?
My pronouns are he, him, his.
He, hims, great. And what do you consider your superpower?
I would say my dogged determination. I'm like a badger. If I sink my teeth into something, I'm not going to let go.
Well done. This question I always throw in here because it's kind of interesting to see what people come up with, but do you have a favorite smell?
I do. I would say it's relatively recently discovered. I moved during the pandemic, and there's a large factory a few blocks from my house that bakes all sorts of fresh goods. And sometimes when they do a chocolate chip cookie bake, the whole neighborhood smells like freshly baked chocolate chip cookies.
My
So I
gosh.
would say that is definitely my favorite smell.
Oh my God, that's such a tease too. It's like you want to go grab some, right?
Yeah.
There
It's been a challenge. I've had to exercise restraint for sure.
you go. What is the best compliment you've ever received?
I would say that it's probably that I've been told I'm generous to a fault. And that means, not financially necessarily, but with my time, I'm always willing to sort of lend a hand, help out, give people advice, answer questions. Help another lawyer out on a file, help somebody out when I was in the military on something that they weren't sure how to do.
Nice. Yeah. Well, that's a great compliment. What is your go-to snack?
It sort of evolved over the course of the pandemic, working from home in particular, where I was a few steps away from my kitchen, but I would say I'd have to land on cheese and crackers.
Cheese and crackers. Nice. And thinking about school, and it doesn't matter if it's high school or Osgoode or wherever, but what was your favorite subject in school?
Definitely history. Growing up, I used to watch all sorts of historical movies with my dad. And so I developed an early sort of interest in military history, but history generally. So I always took a keen interest in it and excelled in school anytime I was in a history class.
Nice. If you had to pick just one word to describe yourself, how would you describe yourself?
I would say industrious.
Industrious. All right. Well, thanks for going through the rapid fire. It gets a little bit behind who David is, and then now we can really jump into your story and your backstory. So take us back a bit for the audience to where it all began with for you. Where did you grow up? Maybe tell us about your values, your passions, sort of your interests. You don't mind.
Sure. So I was born in Moncton, New Brunswick. My parents lived in Shediac at the time, which is a small city outside of Moncton. But we moved to Ottawa when I was quite young on account of my father's work. So I grew up in Ottawa in a middle-class family. My father was a police officer. My mom was a nurse until my brothers and I were born. at which point she became a stay-at-home mom to raise us and take care of us. I'm the middle child of three mischievous boys, so my mom really had her hands full. I'd say I had a conventional childhood growing up in the suburbs of Ottawa. I spent most of my free time enrolled in sports programs or Cubs or Scouts or biking around the suburbs with my friends. Certainly a lot of outdoor time and activities. In terms of my values, my parents instilled sort of key cornerstone values in me from a young age, honesty, integrity, loyalty, things like that. So from an early age, those became very important to me and formative in my personality. In terms of my passions, I love sports. When I was growing up, I played pretty much everything except basketball because I was terrible at basketball. I tried my hand in it, but I was not a star, let's put it that way. In terms of interests, I was interested in military history. As I said earlier, I used to watch all sorts of sort of vintage movies with my father, and so that became an early interest, and it was a good bonding experience with him. And he was in the RCMP, so there's always been sort of a strong military police current in my family, I'd say.
Interesting, really. Really wonderful. And the middle child, huh? That there's always a whole nother story about the middle child. So
Yeah, that's a whole dynamic in and of itself.
yeah, that might be another podcast. Okay, so going to post-secondary school and thinking about our audience here who's maybe at post-secondary, considering going to post-secondary, or maybe just getting out of post-secondary, but it's one of the biggest moments in a young person's journey. And your academic journey is quite impressive overall. How have your undergraduate studies in criminology and political science helped to contribute to your success in the working world, do you think?
Well, I mean, post-secondary education, regardless of the subject matter, is always a good investment. There's a set of core skills that it unlocks. Obviously, hard work. If you take the classes seriously, you take the subject matter seriously, you want to excel. And if you're interested in the subject matter, then, hard work will actually be something that ultimately is enjoyable because you're going to be pursuing something that you're interested in, pursuing something that you're passionate about, and you're investing in yourself by building, right? So I think that's
True.
first and foremost one of the important skills. And then for me in particular, in criminology and political science, I would say it taught me how to think. High school doesn't really prepare you in the same way. You're learning discrete subject matters, but a lot of it is just sort of rote memory recitation of what you've studied. But in criminology and political science in particular, what you're learning and what your preconceived notions about the world are challenged and they're pushed, and you're exposed to different philosophies and different ways of thinking. And so it really expands, I would say, your perception of the world to expose you to ideas that you hadn't heard before. And so I think, those subject matters in particular, and politics, I would say most specifically, as everybody knows, can be quite divisive. But the benefits that come with that are that you get exposed to ideas that are outside of sort of the reality that you've had growing up, in a neighborhood where everybody might share, for the most part, the same political views or the same alliances and allegiances. In university, it's different because you're bringing people together from all over the city, all over the province, all over the country, and, to some extent, all over the world. And the exposure to different thought, I think, is incredibly important in expanding your mind and helping you how to think. I guess the other thing I would say is that my chosen field of law is very interdisciplinary in terms of the nature of the practice. And so, irrespective of what your background is and your education is, it's going to be really valuable bringing it to the practice of law. Criminology and political science, there's a lot of writing, there's a lot of papers, as opposed to something like math, where it's more formulaic. And in law, we do a lot of drafting and we have to draft persuasively. So I think criminology and political science help me develop my drafting skills, my analytic skills, things of that nature.
And your problem solving. Yeah, it's really It's really interesting to hear that, because the insights that one can hear from your conversation is like the whole journey itself is inclusive of those building blocks, which I always say is so important, regardless of what type of program you study. But thank you for sharing a little bit insights into what you learned from that and what you've gleaned from going to school and being part of post-secondary. Let's talk a little bit about a day in the life of David. I mean, I know we've known each other for some time. You've been a very successful lawyer. We're going to get into that a little bit more about some of the advice for young people considering law. But what does a day look like when you wake up and you get ready and you start your day? And what does that look like for you on a typical work week?
Sure. So one thing I love about my job is that it's dynamic. No 2 days are the same. There's tremendous variation to my work, both in terms of the subject matter, but also the tasks. So I've intentionally remained a generalist when it comes to practicing law and doing litigation. What that means is I haven't specialized in one particular area of the law. So some lawyers focus on planning or construction or employment. I haven't done that. I wanted to keep my work dynamic. I wanted to keep it interesting. I wanted to continue to learn about new fields, new industries, new technologies. So I've maintained my sort of generalist approach to the practice of law, which has allowed me to practice really in all areas. Like I've litigated health matters. I've litigated construction matters. I've litigated employment matters. I've litigated fights between shareholders of companies. I've seen sort of new emerging industries that didn't really exist when I started practicing law. When I first started practicing, green energy was a big one that came out. So I could learn about green energy, whether it be solar or wind. And then, there's been a large build out of indigenous law, and I've touched on that more recently. And now we're looking at things like crypto, artificial intelligence. So maintaining a general practice has allowed me to keep my work interesting, always learning, keeping me on my toes. So that's the subject matter.
Yeah.
And I would say the tasks are also very dynamic. So some days I'm reading documents for a court case. Some days I'm drafting a legal argument. Some days I'm in trial or a hearing. Other days I'm in a mediation or a negotiation. Others I'm in client meetings or strategy sessions. Others I'm out business developing and trying to generate new leads for clients. So one thing I can say is that in 15 years of practice, I've never been bored a day. I've been tired. I've been stressed. I've been overworked. Check, check, check. Never been bored.
Never been bored. I think that's really cool because I don't know if people consider law as a place for a lifetime learner, right? And a lot of people want to continue learning and doing new things. And the way you articulated that really opened my eyes too to the amount of things that change in your world. Like, especially with cryptocurrency and AI right now and all the other things you've seen throughout your time, which is super interesting. Thank you for sharing that. It gives a little bit more insights for folks. Thinking about some of the audience members too, and maybe some of them are tuning in today because they're looking for that inspiration, motivation, obviously, to think differently about their career. But I'm sure there's people on this listening who are thinking about maybe becoming a lawyer and thinking about maybe pursuing that path. Do you have any bits of advice or insights you'd like to share for those who might want to build a successful career in law?
Sure. I mean, there's certainly things that I wish that I knew before I became a lawyer. So I'll impart some of that sort of advice and some of that wisdom. I think the first thing would be do your research. You have to really understand what you're getting yourself into. The law is a very rewarding profession, but it's also a very challenging profession, and people should go into it eyes wide open and understand sort of what strengths are best suited for somebody that wants to become a lawyer and what things you really need to develop as skills. Because if you're going to embark on that journey and you're serious about it, then I think you should try to choose a path that will help you enhance some of the skill sets that you need to excel as a lawyer. So doing research is super important, and there's a number of ways that you could do that. You could shadow a law class if you happen to be in a city that has a law school. I don't think there's an issue with just going in and quietly sitting at the back of a class, perhaps, and just sort of seeing what's being taught and understanding the nature of sort of the subject matter. You can also go and sit in a courtroom. So the courts in Ontario are open to the public. You can't go in and film or record, but you can go in and you can sit quietly in the back and you can watch a case if you're interested in doing litigation or criminal law or family law. All those types of cases are going on every single day in the courts. So you could observe and see what lawyers are doing and see what a judge does and basically understand sort of at least a hearing process. And of course, there's a lot that goes on behind the hearing, but it will give you some flavor. And then if you're really interested, you could try to land some sort of internship or some sort of job at a law firm. That will probably give you the best flavor for what it's like to actually practice as a lawyer, and enable you to also make some connections and network, which is one of the other important things that I would sort of advise people to do. So moving into the networking aspect of it, building your network cannot be overstated in terms of the importance. So this is something that I wish I knew before I got into law school. I thought, you know, work hard, do good work, get good grades, and you'll just excel and make your way to the top. And that's certainly part of the equation, but it's not the whole equation. I would actually say equally as important is building out your network. And that network will be people that you meet through jobs, people that you meet through your educational path, people that you will meet through any volunteer community activities that you engage in. Because the truth is, law, like most things, is about relationships. It's about building relationships, building out your networks, and everybody you meet has something to offer. Some people have more to offer than others. Some people have things that are more relevant to where you're going in life than others. But the truth is, everybody has something to offer, and you should be cognizant of that and try to build up your network to be as diverse and wide-reaching as possible, because you never know how things are going to circle back in the future. You never know when, you know, somebody that you volunteered with on campus might end up working at a law firm that you ultimately want to have a job at, or might end up running a company or being senior in a company that outsources work to law firms. And if you do become a lawyer, then that's a potential client contact in the future. So everything at the end of the day is a big web of relationships, and it's important to start building as many strands to that web as early as possible.
Yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense. Thank you so much. It's very insightful to think through sort of the advice you've given. And when we're talking about mentorship, might as well talk a little bit more from the networking side and the mentorship side. So, and it's becoming more and more, regardless of field of study or whatever, is many people can actually see the opportunities that they've made through the networks. And sometimes I say the opportunities that you meet someone that you meet somebody else, and it doesn't always lead to a job, but it also can lead to just building your own professional development, your ability to communicate, your ability to build relationships, as you said. How has mentorship also played a role in your success? And is there someone that comes to mind, or multiple people, or how did mentorship in addition to networking help you get to where you are?
I mean, I think mentorship also can be sort of overstated in terms of its importance. Mm-hmm. I've had mentors in every job that I've ever had, ranging from, you know, working at fast food restaurants when I was a teenager, yep, to in the military, to while being a lawyer. And, you know, basically what you're doing is you're building a relationship with someone who is further along the path that you're pursuing. And what they're able to do is provide more insight into what's on the horizon and how to get there. And they've also cleared some of the sort of thick brush out of the path. Yeah. So the journey's easier for you. And, you know, it can be easier for you from the perspective of them teaching you actual like job skills and the subject matter of the job. And there's a whole philosophy of learning by observing and learning by watching. There's also a philosophy of learning by doing, and mentors can help with that because they can provide sort of general guidance as opposed to overall observations of what you're doing. And that's helpful. And then mentors also can provide broad shoulders to protect you in the event that, you know, you find yourself in a difficult position at the office. It could be, you know, an interpersonal dispute with somebody. It could be a toxic boss. It could be any number of situations that could arise. And having somebody who's senior to you, who's got some sort of wisdom from having gone through years of what you're doing and has more social capital in the business, is invaluable. So certainly you want to have mentors. A lot of businesses will assign people formal mentors, but I find equally important are the informal mentors that you'll build through just having good relationships with people that you work with. You do good work for them. They come to rely on you. You develop a rapport, and they can give you the same sort of level of guidance as a formal mentor.
Yeah, I love that you touched the formal and informal, because I feel like, as you said earlier, about mentorship can be overstated. It's almost like some organizations go as far as like pairing people up, like you said, and you're a mentor, you're a mentee. And in reality, sometimes it happens more organically. Those can be even better special moments of time where you've built that relationship. And sometimes, like even the other day, someone called me, oh, well, thank you for being my mentor. And I was like, well, I guess I am. I don't know. I didn't think that's that the word, right? I think sometimes it's more about the relationship and the advice you're both giving. And I receive as much from the people I talk to. So anyways, I think it's a mutually beneficial one when it works well. And thank you for sharing both sides of the coin there. The military, first of all, 6 years of service, Canadian Armed Forces, thank you so much for your service. What was that experience like for you? And I know you had a passion for history growing up, watching history and things with your dad. But like, how was that experience? Something that you've experienced, been able to tap into skills, knowledge, and what did you walk away from that experience and having spent 6 years in the military?
So I think it was a great experience, and I think it actually prepared me very well for becoming a lawyer and life generally.
Yeah.
I joined the military reserves when I was 16.
Wow.
Prior to that, I had had a couple of jobs at fast food restaurants, and I had a job telemarketing for a landscaping company. And those jobs were fine, and they were great for building some sort of foundational skill sets. But you're probably gleaning that there's a thread of sort of adventure in my spirit, and I wanted to do something that was a little more interesting and a little more dynamic that tied into sort of the military history in my family. So I signed up for the reserves at 16. I served for 6 years. It was excellent because it helped subsidize my undergraduate studies, both through like actual subsidies, but then also through the pay. I got to travel a fair bit in the summers between school years. I would deploy to a military base and I would engage in different types of training. So I got to see different parts of Canada. And I think really one of the most important things is it just took me out of my comfort zone. It was something completely foreign to me. It was something completely new. You know, it's probably a scary prospect for a lot of people, but I think it's important to push yourself. I think it's important to step out of your comfort zone. I think that's the best way to grow is by doing things that are you're unfamiliar with. You sort of level up more quickly by doing something that's new than, you know, something that you're a veteran at doing or that you already excel at doing. It's much harder to sort of keep leveling up if you've already developed a skill set in something. So I think it's good to push the boundaries, push yourself. The military taught great skills. It taught hard work. It taught discipline. It taught people to be dogged and tenacious and relentless. Great, great team building exercises, great leadership exercises. As I sort of worked my way up, I went from being sort of the most junior rank to actually then becoming a soldier that would teach basic training and then teach more advanced classes. So I got to benefit from both sides of being sort of soldier that was receiving training to a soldier that was actually administering the training, which is, a completely different skill set. So overall, I'd say wonderful experience, taught me a lot, great skill sets, great on the resume. Employers really like it, especially in young people, because it shows sort of a commitment to success.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What a wonderful opportunity that was for you and the skills that you gained. You've been recently awarded a number of different awards, also the 40 under 40 for the lawyer, as well as I know that you received the 2016 University of Ottawa's Faculty of Social Sciences Outstanding Alumni Award winner. And I remember you talking about giving the address at the University of Ottawa's Remembrance Day ceremony. What was that day like for you? Just, imagine standing up there and addressing the crowd and your old school and also remembering the fallen and injured soldiers. What did that feel like? How was it? What key messages do you remember that maybe our listeners today should even take note of?
Sure. So, one, I would say it was a great honor that the university asked me to speak at their Remembrance Day ceremony. And because it's in Ottawa, I think that's even a heightened privilege, because that's, the center of government and where the largest sort of Remembrance Day ceremony in the country takes place. So that was only a few blocks away. To be honest with you, and this is going to sound interesting, I'm not actually a huge fan of speaking before crowds, even though I'm a lawyer and an advocate. I'm completely comfortable arguing a case in front of a judge or a panel of judges, but speaking in front of a group of, 100, 200, 300, 400 people,
it's
not a
different
big
story.
Yeah, different story completely, even though it's not really that different. So it's something that, it's something that I don't love doing, and I still have to work on it to get my comfort level up, because it's just not something that comes natural to me.
Yeah.
And they also asked me to deliver half of the address in French, which I did study French all the way up through high school, but it was a bit rusty because I hadn't used it much since moving to Toronto. And at that point, I'd been there for more than 10 years. So I was also having to really quickly brush up on my French skills. But it was a great experience overall. It was an honor. It was a privilege. I think the key message that I tried to leave everybody with in my talk was that while the day is really to remember serving soldiers and the military and those who made sort of the greatest sacrifice and didn't come home, there's also a whole segment of people who come home, but they're still really on the battlefield. And the military has really had challenges with addressing soldiers coming back from conflict with PTSD, with mental health issues, and there's not sufficient support and resources to help get them the care that they need. And tragically, the suicide rate amongst combat veterans in Canada and the United States and other countries is extremely high. And I think we lost more Canadian vets of Afghanistan, for example, to suicide than we actually lost over there in the conflict. So not enough is being done to address that problem. And so the message I wanted to leave people with at the university was that it's great to honor our fallen, but we have to take care of the people that came back that are still with us, but need help, because their minds are still on the battlefield.
100%. I think thank you for that message. And thank you for sharing that experience with the listeners today. And I think it goes beyond so many boundaries that these folks need assistance, and even reentering the workforce at some level if they want to and need to, and recognizing that as well for employers who may be listening to today as well about how important it is to diversify and to support those that have served us. Thank you, David, for sharing that. It's very important. Switching a bit to job hunting. Right now I hear a lot of things, the economy, things, people are revenues are tight, kind of sticking to what they know. There's a lot of different things going on in this space. Obviously, this is where I thrive in the job skills and matching people. But from your perspective, what advice do you have for aspiring legal professionals that are looking to navigate the job market? I know you talked about mentoring building your network, maybe sitting in a law, like in a go and sit and listen to a case. Like those are all things you can do to build your tool belt or your tools. But what do you think about the current job hunting, and any idea of like how maybe to navigate that? And I know it's a bit of a loaded question because someone could be graduating from law school, someone could still be in law school, but just generally, let's say maybe as you're getting towards your end and you're trying to find the job that you want to step your foot into, what are your thoughts about that?
Sure. So I think it really depends where you are in your journey. I mean, obviously, if you're just starting out in law school, you're going to be in a much different position than, you know, somebody who's graduated law school, has written a bar exam and is trying to find a position.
Right.
I think the message that's most important is you have to be deliberate and you have to be proactive in the steps that you're taking. And I find a lot of people, and myself included at this stage of, you know, when I was in law school or undergrad, they look at the immediate steps, but they don't look at the steps two, three steps down the road necessarily. In terms of preparing themselves for their ultimate career. So I think one really helpful exercise that I tell students sometimes, if you're in the early phases of you know, your career, you may be still in school, is draft out what you would say is a very desirable resume for the job that you ultimately want. And what I mean by a desirable resume isn't take the experiences you have and put them down. That's your resume. But draft sort of the dream resume of the experiences that you think would be most appealing to an employer, and then pursue those activities to be able to actually put those things on your resume. So come up with the dream team resume and then go out and pursue those activities. So if you think that you could really impress a law firm by starting a not-for-profit yourself, or by going and doing some cool experience abroad where you're drilling wells or building schools or doing something that shows that you've got a commitment to the community and you're also a go-getter and you're also a bit entrepreneurial, put those on this sort of dream team resume and then action them. Okay, this is what I think an employer would want. How do I create an experience on my resume that conveys that thought, that theme to an employer? And if you start early enough, you're going to be able to actually turn that dream resume into your real resume. And then you're going to be three steps ahead of everybody else. So that would be my advice for people that are early in their studies or early in their careers. You got to be deliberate. You got to be proactive. And you should draft a map of where you are going to end up and then plod towards getting to that endpoint. For people that are further along, for example, in the middle of their studies, I think, you know, if you haven't drafted that map, you should do it. It's not too late, but you should focus on expanding out your contact base and your network, get involved in organizations within the school, get involved in organizations outside the school, preferably in organizations where you will have the opportunity to interface with people in your industry. You can get your name out there. You can meet people. You'll become familiar with them. Just to give you a very quick anecdote, I know that there were a number of people, myself included, who reached out proactively to law firms before the hiring process. Because in law in Toronto, there's a very formal hiring process where all the firms interview at once. But a bunch of students proactively reached out and just asked the student coordinators at those firms if they could go out for coffee with them or if they could have a little tour of the firm. And what that did is it allowed them to basically develop a little bit of a relationship with that person and to give a face to their name. And then when they applied for interviews at those firms, they had a much greater success rate because they had been proactive and they showed the student coordinators that they were the type of people that would take the initiative. And if they got along well when they had their coffee meetup, then, you know, the person was more willing to give them an interview, even if perhaps for whatever reason they might not have otherwise obtained an interview. So be proactive, build your network, build your contacts. For people who are done school and they're actively looking for a job, I would say, again, lean into your networks, lean into your contacts to the extent that you can, pound the pavement, and maybe look for opportunities that are not sort of the standard path. Look for something that's outside the box, because there's lots of unorthodox law positions out there. You know, the path isn't limited to government and private law firms. There's lots of jobs in-house. There's lots of jobs with agencies like the United Nations. There's lots of jobs with charities. You could start your own firm. It's opportunities for people.
Wow, that was some of the best advice I've heard in a long time. Thank you for sharing that. It's so insightful too. And I love the idea of building the resume of where you want to be, because that is so such a great idea. And I think something that the audience can really take to heart here. Thank you for sharing and imparting that wisdom. That's awesome ideas. As a member of the LGBT community, driving force in your firm's diversity and inclusion, how has that been for you, elaborating maybe a bit specifically on some initiatives you championed? You know, there's also sometimes there's different types of work and things that people feel. Is it safe to be LGBTQ in the environments of those industries? Just what's been your general experience, and any advice on some of the stuff that you've helped to champion there that others might think about doing in their firms?
Sure. So I'll answer this in two parts. The first part is sort of my experience as a member of the community. I would say that law typically and historically has been a very conservative profession. When I finished law school and I was applying for jobs, I was nervous for sure about the impact that being a member of that community would have. I think it's changed considerably in the last 15 or 16 years, though. There's been a huge evolution in people's mindsets, and there's been a huge evolution in the way business approaches diversity. A lot of law firm clients actually celebrate and even require diversity when law firms are completing RFPs, for example, to bid on work for companies or municipalities, as an example. They're actually asked specific questions about the diversity of the firm and about the diversity of the people that will be working on the files. So I think while at some point in time, people may have had to make calculated decisions and calculated risks about whether or not to sort of be their authentic selves at work, I think that's the pendulum has really swung the other way. And the truth is, there still may be some firms, there still may be some people who are not accepting. But the truth is, it's such a small number now as compared to what it was before, that you just wouldn't want to work at those firms if they weren't accepting. And the vast majority of firms, probably 90% of them, it's not an issue at all whatsoever. And in fact, in some firms, it would probably be looked at favorably because they're trying to have a population of lawyers that represents the community as a whole. So whether it's, you know, being from the LGBTQ community or from another diverse equity seeking group,
yep,
it's totally okay. And you should remember, first and foremost, your own self-worth and your own well-being, and yeah, only work somewhere where you can be your authentic self and where you will be respected for being yourself by your peers. And if that a workplace is not going to do that, then the answer is it's okay. It's just, that's not the workplace for you, and you wouldn't want to be there. You wouldn't be happy there. And there's enough alternatives. Turning to my work on the Diversity and Inclusion Committee, we've undertaken a number of initiatives. One was a pronoun initiative to have lawyers put pronouns in their signature blocks to identify, of course, what their pronouns are, but also by taking that step to show that we're supportive of the trans community, that we understand that there's people that are different and understand that there are people who need to be recognized based on their pronouns. And so that's one small step that we've taken to try to enhance the diversity and inclusion and acceptance at the workplace. We also have gender neutral bathrooms.
Okay.
So that was another initiative undertaken to support the trans community. We have a regular continuing learning education program at the firm where we bring in speakers. The Diversity and Inclusion Committee has sort of interfaced with the continuing legal education program at the firm to make sure that a large component of the speakers that we do bring in are for equity seeking groups, and they're based on, you know, Black History Month, Pride Month, Truth and Reconciliation Day, like all sorts of different events where we recognize and include equity seeking groups.
Amazing. Thank you for what you do overall and for sharing some of those thoughts. And I, you know, really, when you talk about a legal entity supporting communities and supporting clients of all different backgrounds and experiences and lived experiences, it would make sense that, you know, that that would be the landscape of the individuals. And I also agree with you. I've seen things where, you know, RFPs and things are asking to see this. Like, we want to make sure that we have people that represent and look like and know some of these lived experiences that you may be working in. So thanks for sharing that. And thanks for all you do personally for the community. Thinking, I know we're getting close to the end here and we've covered a lot of ground, but thinking like, what's next for you? Like, I know you got so much on the go. You know, this has been such an inspiring talk. I've learned, even knowing you, I've learned a whole bunch of new stuff about you, which has been really cool. Is there, what's the kind of the future? What are you thinking about both maybe personally, professionally, and where you're going to go from here?
I think I'm happy at the firm that I'm at. I have great files. I have wonderful mentors and mentees. The people that I work with are fantastic in the work that they do, and they're great people that I enjoy spending my time with. So I think I'm going to continue just practicing law, doing what I love, hopefully, you know, building my practice, and then as I get older, being able to be more of a mentor to people, being able to, over a period of time, transition my work, hopefully, to sort of the next generation of lawyers at the firm, and support people and the betterment of the profession and the betterment of the firm.
Wonderful. Couldn't think of a better way to look at that and look at the future here. As I said, we cover a lot. I do want to always give the guests the opportunity, if there's something I didn't ask, something I didn't share, or ask you to share, is there anything you wanted to leave as far as parting words or thoughts with the audience as they're kind of thinking through what we covered today?
Sure. I mean, I think the message that I would leave your listeners with is that you get one life, and fortunately you hold the pen and you get to author the chapters of that book. So don't be afraid to make it an adventure novel, and don't feel constricted or bound to travel the sort of well-traveled path. You really can write your own journey, and you should, and everything will work out at the end of the day, and you should really make your life what you want it to be and pursue your passions.
That's amazing. Thank you, David. Some great closing words, and thank you so much for being part of this experience and also giving your time to spend with us today. I really much appreciate it.
It was great being on the show. I really appreciate you inviting me on here, Brian, and I'm happy to answer any questions. If people want to connect with me, they're of course welcome to connect with me on LinkedIn. And again, please reach out with any questions.
Awesome. Thank you so much. For our listeners, hopefully, if you liked what you heard today, please share this podcast with your network on Spotify. Give us a rating. Follow us on Coffee with Convery with Instagram. This has been Brian Convery, and we want you to stay well, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you so much.